Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 16th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest and prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well, very well. So I only have one overriding question for you, D.R., that you must answer immediately. And that question is it Laurel or is it Yanni?
Honestly, I haven't heard the audio, so I can't decide either.
I have to admit, I was in the car, and I heard a report on it, NPR report on it, and I distinctly heard the person say Yanni multiple times. Right? And then there was a discussion about frequency and power and all that kind of stuff, but I heard him say Yanni. I get home, my son pulls out his cell phone and plays the same tape, and I distinctly heard Laurel. So I heard them both. And I feel very strongly both ways. I mean, I heard both Yanni the first time on the car radio and Laurel the second time on a cell phone speaker.
So I don't know if it's a Laurel or Hardy either.
It could be. Could be Laurel. Anyway, all right. So you haven't voted yet. Well, I'm sure that whatever you decide, whatever you hear,
Team
DR will be
and Team
correct.
Jacob.
Yeah. Last week, D.R., we talked about an interesting development out in California, which was a move by the state of California to require that starting in the year 2020 or something, all new construction of homes in California include solar panels on the roof. And we talked about, we had questions about it back and forth, but this past week, there's been some continuing discussion about the wisdom of having done that. And I think that there's a larger discussion to be had about what are the wisdom of a policy and or the unintended consequences of a policy. So fill me in. I think there were a couple of articles that you were up on. I mean, what's the buzz as far as California's new mandate to install solar panels on every new home?
Yes, sir. There are two main criticisms of the California effort. One from the libertarian right, from Steve Chapman of the Chicago Tribune, and a piece that was picked up by, of course, Reason magazine, faulting the California initiative as being cost prohibitive and not being as effective as a gasoline tax. And there was another far more interesting criticism or analysis of this policy by David Roberts of Vox, who basically analyzed the case for and against the solar mandate. And in terms of the arguments against the solar mandate, he pointed to those who argue that the policy is indeed cost prohibitive and extremely expensive way to reduce emissions, and that the solar effort will not make a huge dent in emissions, and also the idea that that it will somehow contribute to the housing crisis in California because of the perceived expense it will add to building housing in California, although he also noted some of the benefits, the perceived benefits of the policy, which is, among other things, this demonstrates a political coalition supporting clean energy, which is something, especially on a federal level, that's very, very rare. So if you need it on a state level, that's not bad.
So basically, the argument is that interesting set of points that Roberts makes, but I think the third one is one that you mentioned was kind of interesting, that by mandating the solar panels on people's roofs, you don't really make additional emissions reductions because, in a sense, it's not new clean energy, right? Do you follow that argument there? I'm looking at it now. It says mandating one form of renewables does not increase the total amount that will be deployed. It just shuffles the mix around.
Yes, and this sort of dovetails with the Steve Chapman point and others who've argued against the California solar effort, basically saying that the biggest amount of emissions in California come from transportation, and that putting solar on roofs does nothing to stem the transportation issue. But of course, you know, people can do multiple things at one time. We can multitask on this issue, and just because you have this policy does not mean that you cannot make headway towards cutting emissions from transportation in California.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting observation, and perhaps, but it seems that what Roberts is saying is that you have to take advantage of the political coalition when it's there. And if everyone, if there are enough people supporting this in one place at one time, it's worth going after and actually doing it in spite of what might be less than, not wise policy, but maybe not an optimum policy. Is that a fair statement?
That's definitely a fair statement. And another benefit of the policy that Robert cites is that rooftop solar could displace natural gas as a home heating standard. And that's very, very important because, you know, this policy, if it definitely spreads to other states and if people realize that they can rely on solar for heating, it could finally kill dead this zombie idea that natural gas is a bridge fuel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that mentality and that conventional wisdom peddled by the Boston Globe op-ed editorial page, among others, is a direct threat to the expansion of clean energy. And if people can come to realize that solar is preferable as a home heating alternative to natural gas, that can finally drive a stake through the heart of fracking in this country, potentially.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point, and it is another point that Dave Roberts at Vox has made in the past, and it is the concept that in order to address climate change, we must, to quote him, electrify everything. That is to say, we should not directly use natural gas for any purpose anymore. I know that in my home here, we have a natural gas stove, we use a natural gas clothes dryer, right, and we have natural gas for the home heating and for the hot water. Right? So his argument is that all of those things could be done with electricity, which could then be done, via clean energy. And I guess the argument I think you were just making is that you have more solar panels on the roof, that contributes to the idea of electrifying everything in the house, because you could heat your house with electric power because you're getting it on the roof, and why not go that path, right? It contributes to this idea that we should be building infrastructure and buying water heaters for our homes that run on electricity, because then we can buy clean power to drive it, right?
Indeed. And Roberts hints at something that is also, I think something that should be emphasized, that it's very, very likely that this policy would not have come about were it not for the need by states, by California, to defend and to strike back against the assault on clean energy being launched by the federal government. Again, we are looking at an administration that is doing everything it can to strangle clean energy, to destroy clean energy, and this is California using something that people on the political right ought to believe in, states' rights, to say we are going to make a stand in favor of clean energy. So even if this is a flawed policy, you can respect the thought process behind the policy that this is where the state and the country and all countries need to go to as much clean energy as possible. And for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. When people in California see the devastation that the current presidential administration is wrecking in terms of clean energy, they are naturally inclined to go in as aggressive a direction as possible in opposition to that, and I can't blame them for that.
No, I mean, I guess I see this policy out in California as, I mean, it's also a jobs policy as well. I mean, if you're going to put solar panel on new homes, that means someone has to do that. So there's going to be construction work in doing that, and that basically increases the constituency that supports clean energy.
Can we argue that perhaps Jerry Brown may be remembered as the greatest jobs governor God ever created?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the interesting point is that you don't necessarily, of course, I know nothing about the detailed politics that goes on in California, but it seems a reasonable thing to say that you need to take advantage of the moment when you have it. And if you can get everyone in the state in particular, the say the real estate industry and guys like that are willing to accept a proposal that may increase their cost, I mean, you should take advantage of it. You should not walk away, right? And I think that probably leads to, I don't know what the right word is, suboptimum, and I don't think is the right word, but things that may not be perfect. But I guess that brings me to the point I was going to make before, was that as we go forward in the slow work of building a clean energy economy, there will be cases where the policy may not be perfect, or there are unintended consequences that we have to deal with. And for me, I don't know what your opinion is, DR, but how should we as a movement be ready to deal with that? I mean, think of the case with the Solyndra failure, right? Remember, Solyndra was a solar PV maker, and the catch they had was somehow the solar panels were built on a cylindrical basis, I think. That was the geometry they were in. And that company failed and was the target of a huge amount of criticism of President Obama. This was 5 or 6 years ago. So there's an unintended consequence where something you're trying to do kind of backfires. How do we defend against that, or sort of inoculate yourself as a movement against things that are likely to go wrong? Because God knows everyone's human, and there'll be problems with the policies that we try and implement when you get down to the nitty-gritty. I mean, do you see some way that in a different venue, people have been able to do their best to make wise policy, but then be prepared to recognize there may be problems with it and try and fix it?
I think that is definitely something that people do have to take into account, and to try to come up with ways of offsetting potential pain. But we do have to recognize in a broader perspective that in any sort of transition, there is going to be some degree of unpleasantness. I mean, there's a joke that's attributed to Bill Maher about, when there was a transition from videotapes to DVD, obviously people at Blockbuster Video, they didn't necessarily enjoy it, but obviously that transition had to be made, and there are going to be unintended consequences as we begin to transition away from dirty energy sources to cleaner energy sources. But that simply has to be taken into account. There should be policies enacted to try to offset the burdens that are caused, but obviously we have to go through those burdens in order to get to where we need to be.
Well, I think that the best way to deal with unintended consequences, in my mind, is something we have to take a kind of an example from the Affordable Health Care Act, right? The so-called Obamacare. And what's happened is that the conservative party in this country has consistently refused to even consider any retroactive improvements to the bill once it was passed. I mean, something starts to happen and you see, oh my goodness, there's a problem here. We need to pass some tweak to the legislation to correct this flaw that we unintentionally put in there. I mean, that has to happen in a way that has not happened over the past, certainly the past 8 years under the Obama presidency. And I guess what it speaks to is that it's very, very important for progressives to elect leaders to Congress or the state houses that are willing to tweak policy and do the right thing at every step of the way for clean energy, right? So in the same, everything rewinds back to a call to elect the right people, go to the polls this November and elect people who are willing to make the best shot and then go back and fix it after the fact, right?
Absolutely.
Well, okay. I guess so we've solved the question of unintended consequences for the world. Nothing bad will ever happen as a result of well-intentioned policies going forward. And I still say it's either Yanni or Laurel, depending on what time I listen to the tape. Yeah. So we got to put it down there. Let me tell you that we'll put up links to some of these interesting articles, particularly the stuff from Dave Roberts talking about the California thing. That'll be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can also find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can get to the click from there through to the blog and listen to the Facebook version of this podcast. You can listen to this directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast, any of a number of the downloadable real-time podcast distribution apps you can get on your phone. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the 18-month-old administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Bye. Good night to everyone. Bye, Yanni. Bye, Laurel. See you next week.
Very cool.